Human Resources. And today we are doing the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division, or otherwise known as MHDD, MHDD-SD. And it looks like we do have a quorum here. So we will begin with Sheila. Sheila will give us the analysis and the recommendation of legislative fiscal, and we'll have Gary here as well as Gary Kapp to Gary Weeks and Gary Kapp to as we go along. So this is a work session on House Bill 5029.
Sheila. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be working from this packet. It has a cover memorandum on the top, and a few pages behind there is a summary worksheet for the agency of our recommendations. And I think I will start working from the worksheet. Hopefully that will make a little more sense. It's about four pages in. It's labeled page number one, the first page of the agency worksheet. And this shows you from the 1997 legislative adopters budget works through to a current service level. And what I have done here is to adjust that current service level for items that were included in the governor's budget in the program reduction package that were really current service level items. So you get to an LFO adjusted current service level. Then there is a listing of the governor's other reductions and enhancement packages, and I'll go through the recommendations for those in just a minute. But you can see then that we get to a governor's recommended budget. The agency came in with some reshoot adjustments, which are basically a carry forward of items that were in their April 97-99 biennium rebalance, carried forward, those that carried forward into 99-01, and a few other technical adjustments. And then we have some LFO recommended reductions I'll walk through, and we get to a bottom line LFO recommended budget there of $672.1 million general fund, $1,373.8 million total funds. Let me walk you through in a little more detail then the recommendations on the governor's policy packages. If you can,
before Sheila begins, can you tell us what's the page number on which all the policies are explained?
The policy packages are explained beginning on page 3.
In this book.
There are various pages under the individual division presentations or budget unit presentations in that book. So I would have to go through and identify where they're explained. I've summarized them for you on page 3 of this handout. So if you go some pages further.
And we can see what...
Yeah, we can see what the policy packages do. Again, a very summary explanation. And then the LFO recommendations on those. So I did try to bring them together and I'm very sorry. The first packages were a summation of the 090 program reduction packages in the governor's budget. It included rebalance plan roll-ups from the November 98 e-board actions. Primarily those were for transferring foster care children from services to children and families to this agency's responsibility. It added a forensic ward at Oregon State Hospital. It increased increased funding for hospital overtime, staffing, and drug costs. There were some fund shifts reflected there, primarily for Medicaid match rate and some other fund shifts. The inflation factor was reduced from the current service level in this package. The director's office prorate was included in there, and some long-term vacant positions were eliminated. The legislative fiscal office recommendation is to approve that, except that, as I mentioned, included in that package was funding for additional overtime and staffing at the state hospitals. There was a total of about $1.6 million that carried forward into 9901 for that. In an effort to find some general fund savings for this subcommittee to use in later budget considerations, I'm recommending that half of that additional overtime and staffing money be reduced or be cut from this package and require the agency to manage the overtime better than they have been able to do to date. There are two reasons why I think this is doable. One is that part of the reason for the additional overtime in 97-99 was overcrowding on some of the hospital wards where they needed additional staffing. They have gotten an additional forensic ward and the staff associated with that in the budget now. And so hopefully that will help relieve some of the pressure to add staff on an overtime basis. Also, there was a float pool concept, some unfunded positions that the department was, or the agency was supposed to use to sort of act as substitute teachers would in a school setting, but to make staffing available when otherwise overtime might be authorized. And that has worked to varying degrees depending on the extent that they were able to keep people available for that float pool concept. They've had some instances where people that were in the float pool moved to full-time positions and so weren't available for the float pool concept. So to the extent that they are able to keep people available in the float pool, they should be able to reduce their overtime needs. So that's the rationale behind that $867,767 of general fund reduction that I'm recommending there.
I'm sorry, I don't see it.
Okay, we can go to page 3. Right here.
Oh, okay. We're looking at the policy packages on page 3 and
in the boxers package on the program reduction. The line that says LFO recommendation. You may be confused because I see I would have an extra line there in that discussion, but my recommendation again is to approve the 090 packages as in the governor's budget, except take out $838,767 of the general fund and expect the agency to manage the overtime needs. Okay, the next package is package 101. This is some additional positions that would provide training and technical assistance to folks out in the community and to local governments that are doing abuse investigations, with the thought that if people are better trained, they'd be better able to determine if abuse has occurred or to keep an eye out for potential abuse. The recommendation is to not approve the package, and that's just due to overall budget constraints. This is not a package that has been included in the COSHA budget.
Madam Chair, are we supposed to ask questions about these now?
Yes, go ahead. Senator Shields?
I get real concerned about it, abuse investigation. Could I ask Barry maybe to describe the how this translates to human situations?
Madam Chair, Senator Shields, I'd be happy to. I'm Barry Cass. I'm the administrator of the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services. Thank you, Gary. The focus of our service system has shifted to the community. The Office of Client Rights within the division administration, which reports directly to me, has been responsible for investigating allegations of abuse in state hospitals and training centers, and more recently in those group homes that we directly operate. However, there are 4,000 DD folks in residential programs and another 1,800 in group homes and foster homes for people with mental illness, plus people in work settings. The statute says that there is a requirement that we investigate abuse in community settings as well. We rely on our community partners and case managers to do that. What this package would do would be to train people at the community level in the 32 mental health programs around the state in how to conduct those investigations, provide documentation of whatever evidence is required, and file a report upon which has legal validity and effectiveness in dealing with the employees who are charged with abuse. This is not a package in which additional state employees are going to go out and investigate abuse everywhere, though sometimes we help the counties do that. Our problem, I think, is that we have a growing number of people in the community, and increasingly we are teaching community people what abuse means, whether it's sexual abuse, physical abuse, exploitation financially of clients in community settings, verbal abuse, or neglect. And we need to be sure that the public is confident that the services we provide are safe and meet a standard that we can be proud of. And frankly, as we've been looking at closing Fairview and having a totally community-based system, particularly on the DD side, I think that we're going to have problems in the future if we don't do that kind of training. So that's what this package will do. At this point, we see a growing trend in the number of abuse allegations. That reflects mostly, I think, not an increase in abuse per se, but in better understanding on the part of community caregivers and the case managers about what abuse is and how vigilant we must be in protecting our clients and patients in community settings. And it probably goes without saying, but I should mention it on the record, that there is liability here in that, as you know, from time to time, something happens in a community setting and people want to know why the agency wasn't there and protecting those folks. That's what we're trying to anticipate and prevent with this package.
Gary, who is doing these investigations now?
County staff, case managers in developmental disabilities programs and in mental health programs in the community mental health programs around the state.
But they represent specialists in abuse investigation. They're just
correct.
Regular therapists. What training have they had now?
Madam Chair, Representative Ross, we provide consultation and technical assistance. Our quality improvement program staff, as well as our Office of Client Rights, provide some technical assistance and consultation. But in terms of formal training, we have not been able to do that. We do not have the funding or staffing for that.
So what gave rise to this concern about our the safety of our clients that promoted the need for this training?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Ross, the legislature in the 91 session passed a new statute regarding community abuse investigations. It took us another biennium to get ready to do that and to begin implementing that process. So since 94, 95, we've been doing these investigations and working with the county to get them performed. Sometimes the county will say, and staff will say to us, we're so involved with this process, we need an outside party, a third party to do that. So the more we've done this, the more we've learned that kind of expertise is lacking and needs to be developed.
Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Gary Weekster from the Department of Human Resources, and I think maybe most pointedly what gave rise to this was I said to Barry, this is going to be a priority package for us in mental health, and as he knows, it has been since we put the agency budget together and went to the governor and now to you, because we're closing Fairview, and we promised, we sat before people and promised parents and so on, that we were going to place their children or their spouses in community homes where they'd be safe, where they'd be healthy as we close Fairview. And I've been real aggressive on this with the division in saying that we need to fulfill that promise. That means we need people in those homes, not just training for people to investigate abuse, but people who are going to be able to visit these homes and try to identify where there are potential problems before people actually bear abuse. And that's part of what I would like to have these folks doing at the local level, is being in those homes on some regular basis so the operators of these homes know that they're going to be visited, that we're going to be looking at the quality of care that goes on in those homes. And of all your recommendations here, this is the one that concerns me the most, Madam Chair, because I think this is where we're most vulnerable, and I think we owe that to these people that we're putting out in those community homes. Not being there, a lot can go on in 4,000 community-based locations and stuff.
Well, I guess my comment about that would be, first of all, I would hope that there is some, whether it's inspection or registration or licensing or whatever for these homes, mm-hmm. prior to any of the clients going into the homes, that has to be done. Is that done?
Madam Chair, it is.
Okay. So that would be number one. It's not as if we're just putting our clients from Fairview into some unknown, unregulated, unlicensed, or registered home. And so from what I've heard, it would almost sound like like we didn't do that. And in looking at the package, positions 2.37 FTEs. It would seem to me that you could get some of this information out to people just in a handout, just paper to people for them to know what should be, if they think there is abuse, how it should be filed, what things are actual proof of that, and that sort of thing. Is that something that you do now?
Madam Chair, yes, we have all kinds of rules and documents and paper and so forth. But I think I was so cautious about blaming my boss for this package that I probably misspoke. But we do have a licensing and certification process for the homes themselves, and we have a criminal history check process that we've implemented in the past several years that hopefully catches people who would otherwise present a risk of abusing these residents. But after there is an allegation of abuse, that's a different situation.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with paper training, that is, read this manual, read this book, is that there's a lot that goes on in an investigation, as with a criminal investigation or auditing or whatever kind of investigation. It's how you ask the question, how you document the evidence, what kind of a record you make on which decisions are going to be made about people's jobs that allows you to use what you learn to take action that makes things safer. And that is something that really needs to be done in a training environment. I must say, just one of the casualties of the problem that we've had in financing over the past decade or so has been that we haven't enhanced training the way we should. And I think everybody knows that that's a problem in state government. We've done the best we can, but we can't get that kind of training in place without staff to do it. That's what this is about.
Okay. Madam Chair, could I go back to package
90?
The reduction is $238,777 but on the spreadsheet is $597,467. Why is there a difference?
Because of how I presented the 090 package on the front page to get to an adjusted current service level, the number on the front page of the spreadsheet for the 090 program reduction package is an adjusted number. The number in the box on page 3 is the actual number that is in the governor's printed budget for the 090 packages. And so my recommendation actually would affect what is currently in their current service level, because that it was a continuing cost that when the current service level was calculated was included in that. So if you're looking at the first sheet, the reduction would not come out of the 090 line. It would come out of this current service level line.
You mean a combination of lines?
Right.
Oh,
right.
Awesome. Okay.
Thank you. I didn't mean to confuse you, but we tried to show the updated current service level. But then on the packages, I'm trying to show the action from the governor's printed budget number.
Okay. Representative Loken.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm glad I came in at this point because I'm sorry I was late. Office was late and then lunch. I had to get some lunch. The question I have results from a problem with a QRF in my district. And they have to have, these background checks on people that they have to just take people around here and there and have drivers or who work there for any reason that have. But the problem is trying to get it done in a timely way. Sometimes they have to just, they don't have tremendous resources either. And they have been hopeful that they could get a system whereby they wouldn't always have to go through DHR to get the background checks. And if they could go through a private company and have them handled that way so that they could get a a quicker for background check and be able to function better. And I am wondering if any of that is encouraged by DHR. Whoever wants to answer that.
Representative Wilson, let me take a crack at it. The issue of how quickly you can do background checks isn't just an issue in mental health development disabilities. It's true in SDSD and SDF and other places.
No, I know.
Background checks. And there was I believe there was a piece of legislation that would have provided for these private background checks, but one of the problems is they don't have access to all the data that we do. Our data comes through the LEDS program, State Police LEDS program, Law Enforcement Data System. We process that through LEDS as fast as they can process it. Then we do, for some background checks, we actually go to the FBI records. We do fingerprint checks and everything for long-term histories on, in some cases, for our own staff as well as for people we contract with. And that does take time. I mean, that takes 4 to 6 weeks sometimes to get a fingerprint check and a complete background check on folks. So the dilemma with having a private group is unless you're willing to give a private organization access to the law enforcement data system, there's nothing to check other than public court records.
I don't know for sure who has access to LEDS outside of the state. If it is a qualified agency that has access, for instance, to our DMV records, I would think they might also have access to LEDS, but maybe I'm wrong.
Madam Chair, Representative Loken, it's a very narrow band of folks who have access to the LEDS system. And the state police, I think, correctly has kept a very tight rein on the law enforcement data system. So being able to access DMV is much different than going into your law enforcement data system and looking up criminal backgrounds for people that go back for years and years. And then being able to interpret, you know, to what extent you're going to allow somebody with a criminal history to actually serve. In some cases, you know, you make decisions that say that criminal record is not germane to the work that they're going to do, and you'd permit it.
Madam Chair, Representative Wilson, we recognize the inconvenience this has imposed. It does have one immediate benefit, which is that when you tell people who are applying for a job that they're going to be checked, a certain percentage drop out. So the providers have come to us and said, this is taking too long. Our rules used to say that you couldn't employ the person in direct care until the check was completed. We now have amended our rules, and so we're able to say that under certain conditions, with direct supervision, the person can begin work immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But if the state wants to have this kind of a security and assurance, and we do catch a number of people, more than you would imagine, who have criminal histories and shouldn't be in direct care positions, if we want to take the risk of doing it faster, we could do that. And we've elected not to, which has placed a burden on the direct care provider. And frankly, we're still negotiating with them about ways in which we could make this work more smoothly, work more efficiently, work more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is a record has to be produced, the information has to be made available, we have to do some communication, and that does take time. And we're still looking for ways to make it faster.
Yeah, I would really encourage that because it does create a handicap. And sometimes they have to just pick someone up, and they have to get someone to do it. And it might be a good friend that they know is absolutely a fine citizen, and here you have to stop and have a background check. But I'm personally going to look into some of the types of background checks that are out there because I have been interested in that, and especially with one company that I believe is very commendable and probably do all kinds of background checks.
I would be very interested in learning more about that myself. And I'd be happy to
if we find something out, I'd be happy to share it with you.
Okay. If there are no more questions on that, we'll move on. Unless you want to...
Just to summarize a little bit, the recommendation to not fund this is primarily in recognition that this is an enhancement to their existing operations, and in this environment, we're trying to reduce the number of enhancements that get funded. There may be some problems out there, but overall, the system is working. It could probably work better. Whether this is the way to address that, I'm not sure. But there are some options here if this is a package that folks are interested in seeing. There could be some direction to the agency to see what they could do either within existing budget or as a priority for any additional funding that becomes available during the biennium through a rebalance plan. This is something that could go if the agency wants to identify some additional reductions elsewhere to fund this, that's always an alternative. Or it's something that the subcommittee could consider when it's looking at its ad back list to fund this particular package.
Madam Chair. Representative Ross.
I think this is really important. When we started moving people into adult foster home as a way to give them a more family-like environment and to reduce costs, that was done and it was successful. But after a while, we found out that there were homes who were employing people who were not good to the people that were moved in there. And we had to go back, and the state had to go back and do a lot of reworking to assure quality in adult foster homes. This is sort of the same pattern. We are moving people out of Fairview because we believe it's the right thing to do. We think that it's best for them to be in the community. We think it's best to be flexible. And I don't care how we do it, whether we reduce Gary Weeks' palatial housing allowance or what we do. But I think it's very important that we do protect the people, because these are very vulnerable people. With the salaries that we pay, I'm sure that 90% of the employees we have are good employees and are doing it, and I visited group homes in our area, and the employees are wonderful people. But, you know, with the salaries that we pay, there is a fringe element who take these jobs and who are not compassionate and sometimes evil intent. And I just feel it's very important that we provide safety for the people that we put in these group homes. Flexibility is wonderful. Community flexibility and informal atmosphere is wonderful, but it also creates opportunities for mischief.
Thank you.
I'm going to make a statement if I could. First of all, we know that we're closing Fairview and that we are going to be putting some folks into community care. We should be preparing for that, and for the homes that already exist and the community care that already exists, we should be careful in making sure that we have the right personnel that are working there, and legitimate people running the homes. But because we know that we're going to close Fairview, we can look forward to being able to look into this a little bit more carefully, maybe, than foster home. But if there was a problem there, I think that was found out probably through some volunteer efforts. It still goes on in that way through volunteers that helped identify possible abuse. But to say that $304,000 is going to end all the abuse that could or would exist is just, I just don't think that's realistic. We're talking about a fair amount of people, and that amount is not going to end all abuse. It might do well in helping to train some of the people to know how to proceed when they see abuse occurring, because that's how you explained it, Barry, is that basically there are certain steps that you must take, ways in which you ask questions, and so forth. And so this sounds a little bit more technical than an overall viewpoint that by not funding this or putting this on the back burner here, all of a sudden we're going to have rampant abuse. Nobody wants that, and particularly of individuals that are developmentally disabled, and so please, I don't want it to sound somehow that, you know, those people who want everything and don't feel constrained at all by the money that's available can say that, well, now, you know, we really care, and so because we care so much, And what that intimates representative is that those of us who feel constrained and have to make the tough decisions and choices don't care. Somehow those that don't have the votes to actually make the choice can say of those that do have to make these decisions, somehow implicitly saying that we don't care. So
I apologize if that was the implication. It's just that I do feel that this is an important issue, and I didn't want to stress that.
I think it's an important issue, too.
I'm sure, and I too hope I didn't say that if you approve this package, there will be no abuse.
Right. I didn't hear
you. I did not intend to say that, and I would not say that. There, whether we like it or not, there will be someone abused.
And in fact, Gary, I didn't say, I wasn't intimating that you said there would be abuse. It sounded like the conversation was going that somehow this was going to solve anything that ever was a problem. So, Senator Fisher.
Yeah, there's one thing about it here. It was mentioned 4,000 homes now.
Yeah.
These homes have been out there, the bulk of them. We've been only dealing with about 320 people from the time we really earnestly started talking about closing Fairview, because they'd already stopped taking people at Fairview, which means that all the rest of the people that have been and would have gone to Fairview under certain circumstances had we not stopped taking them some 5, 6, 7 years ago. They've all been going out. Those have all had adjustments, and they're in the community, and there's means already available to check those homes. That's a good percentage of the 5,000 or the 4,000 homes right there alone. If you take 320 people in 5-bed situations, and you're only talking about another 50 or 60 homes that would be created to take care of this extra group going out. So you're not talking about even any fraction of 4,000 even, basically. And my feeling is that I would agree with you on this basis that we already have set up out there the program to take care of people in exactly the same situation. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe just because somebody's transferred from one situation to another that they deserve any other concerns, basically, just because they're being transferred, that somebody else doesn't have from the moment they come in to a system. So I don't have a real problem with deleting this particular service or this particular item out of the budget, because I think that those things are basically pretty well taken care of in any event. And again, to even suggest that a rate of pay is something that would cause someone to mistreat a patient, I think is totally wrong. It's never been anything that I've been able to put my finger on that's ever shown that the state paying much, much higher rate has any lesser rate of patient abuse than those of us that are forced to take care of people for a lesser rate or for a lesser dollar an hour wage than the state. As a matter of fact, it might be just the opposite way. It would almost look like that perhaps the state was a little heavier per capita and cases than we have been in the private sector, because probably we've been a little more open to public scrutiny and so forth than some of the state facilities have been. So I think that basically the means and the mechanics are set up there to take care of this process as it goes into effect, and that we can get by without this, without jeopardizing or without breaking promises to people that are having their family and loved ones placed in the public or private sector, rather, or the out of from the state run hospital.
Madam Chair, Barry, do you go out and visit these homes regularly? Do you inspect these homes at a regular interval?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, yes, we do. We have a regular schedule for both announced and unannounced visits, both on the DD and the mental health side. And in addition, county staff are in these homes on a regular basis.
How follow-up question, Madam Chair. How regular do you visit these homes?
In I'd have to ask Madeline Olson and James Case to provide specifics about the homes, but Our licensing schedule is every 2 years. We have a new quality improvement schedule in DD, which includes self-assessment visits for technical assistance, licensing visit, and then another periodic visit. So those will be on roughly 6 month increments. But if you want more detail about that, I'd have to ask those folks to come to the table and be specific about what their staff are doing.
See, I believe that if you visit them every 6 months, you're monitoring them. And if you see any cases of abuse or any increase in cases of abuse, you can always, I believe you can always come to the e-board and say there are evidence of increases in abuse and you need to have additional investigators. I think they always have that option, don't they, if they see any increase in incidents of abuse, to come to e-board and justify for the piece, for their request. I mean,
well, it is an emergency board.
Yes.
They also have the opportunity, as Sheila said, to kind of during the rebalance, if they see a priority in that area, they could make some adjustments, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Sheila.
I had a question and then a comment. The first one was based on what Senator used. She said, you know, she said if you have evidence of abuse, you can come to the e-board, but do you have evidence now either of increased abuse, the potential of increased abuse as you move in more and more people from Fairview out into the community?
Madam Chair, Senator Shields, the question, it's a good question. What we have is an evidence of increased allegations of abuse. We want to encourage people who believe abuse has occurred to make those allegations so that they can be competently investigated. We don't want to find additional abuse. We want to be sure that people are vigilant about it so that they know it when they see it and report it properly and get properly investigated. And those allegations of abuse have increased. They've been increasing regularly since we began implementing the statute which the legislature passed in the early 90s.
To follow up with the comment, and this is, again, you know, I always get a laugh in my head at the fiscal conservative within me. Because I think about the $200,000 that we'll spend, and I think about what just one or two major in the newspaper scandals, abuse things that would blow up out there. And we're closing this institution down, and we're going to put this new system in, and it'll finally be operating at 100%. And I think that this is a very timely package to make sure that we don't have any of those flaws, because we're asking these people in this new setting to be well trained to investigate the abuse. And this is an enhancement to get out of, yeah, they've been doing this stuff in the past, but not with this whole new system at 100% running. So I just really have concerns about it.
Madam Chair, Representative Lawton. What type of training do you have now? Do you have a program, and do you have people already doing this?
Madam Chair, Representative Loken, we have an Office of Client Rights. Eva Kutas is the manager responsible for that. Most of the work that office does, and those staff are all trained. They're experts. We have a forensic nurse who knows how to distinguish different kinds of bruises and that kind of thing. Those people work primarily in state-operated environments where we've always had an obligation to directly investigate. More recently, those staff have also been providing consultation to people in the Office of Mental Health and the Office of Developmental Disabilities who work with the county programs and their case managers who go out into these homes and do investigations. And sometimes our own staff in those two offices have been going out and investigating for the county when the county has asked us to do so. But that's the limit of what we've been able to do. What we're doing now is consolidating both community and state institution and state-operated programs in one Office of Client Rights. That office will now take on the responsibility of working with the community programs directly.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, we believe they need to provide that kind of training. I can see that there is some question about whether this is affordable and whether the enhancement is credible at this time. And we can certainly go back and look at how we might organize ourselves differently to do this within the continuing service level. But I would hope that if there is a list, that you would put this on the list, because I think we can make more information available that would suggest that it probably needs to be done now. We never meant to imply that low-paid workers abuse people more. The problem we have is that my son is getting paid minimum wage. I trust him with my life, but as soon as he can find a job at $9 an hour, he's going to take it. And that's what we have in our system is a lot of turnover, and I just think there are risks there that we don't appreciate. The fact that we haven't had one of these episodes in the interim where everyone says, why wasn't the mental health division out there making sure this wasn't happening, has been, I think, a charmed light for us. But when this happens, I just want to be sure that we are on the record saying, this is a risk. It's a risk for the agency, and it's a risk for the providers, and a risk for the counties, and we could make the system better, and we may have to wait to do that, but I'm under orders.
Follow up.
Counties have their own systems too, I suppose, for training and handling. I'm thinking of Clackamas Kearns, pretty well functioning county in this respect. And I just wonder if some of those resources couldn't work with your.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Loken, the statute permits for certain kinds of residential programs for counties who have equal or superior standards to do their own licensing. And both Multnomah and Clackamas have done this for adult residential programs.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that Clackamas County, they do a very reliable, incredible job. I'm certainly not pointing the finger at any county. I think it's really a responsibility of ours to make sure that there is greater consistency out there and a better capacity to do this. But yes, each county has organized itself differently. We work with them because that's what our statutes say, that we work with counties as our partners,
mm-hmm.
and we would want to continue that and strengthen it in this area.
Okay. Well, I just want to make a statement because I'm getting concerned that this is getting a little blown out of proportion, because I want to remind the committee that the full budget for this division is $1,373,771,265. General fund is $672 million. If you did have a whole escalating problem with abuse, you would not be off the hook, because you have $672 million. If this is that big a priority, you need to find it within your $672 million budget. You see what I'm saying? I understand this is an enhancement, but right now it's not as if you're doing nothing. You're doing something now. This is an enhancement, and you can go on record that hopefully there won't, nothing happens and you don't want to be blamed, but I'm going to go on record as you still will get blamed, because this is a small part. It's an enhancement. You're already functioning and doing that. So we need to regain perspective here about what we're talking about. This is, it's getting a little out of hand here. With the discussion,
sure, I think we've got the picture lined up.
Okay.
And I imagine we'll get blamed in one way or another. But
that's right.
We will, in fact, try to do, as the analysts have suggested, I think Barry said, is try to figure out a way to do this. And if it becomes a serious problem, we'll have to adjust our resources to deal with it. And in that case, you would be apprised of it anyway,
right,
as a legislative assembly. If it were a serious problem and we were going to adjust our resources, we would be talking to you and saying, here's our way of dealing with
mm-hmm.
it. So.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Let's go on to package 131.
This one will be less contentious, I promise. This is the director's office policy packages. It's the division share of the prorate of the policy packages in the director's office. At this point, the recommendation is to fund it at this level until you act on the director's office budget, and then we'll come back in and make any necessary adjustments to this division's budget. Package 6203 adds resources at the Oregon State Hospital to make sure that they meet federal and state licensing criteria. And it's primarily staffing. There is a little bit, or there is $183,000 of general fund in the package for expendable property, things like special wheelchairs, other special equipment. And our recommendation is that the agency has identified $58,000 other funds that they could use for those expenditures, and we would recommend that you give them the limitation to do that and reduce the general fund by $83,481. So in all, they only take a $25,261 reduction in their expendable property expenditures from the governor's budget level. So it's still a very solid package for them. On the next page, page 4, package 216 would add a 15-bed secure residential treatment facility out in the community and add some of the foster care beds for mentally ill who are coming out of acute care or state hospital commitment. This is not recommended. Again, this is an enhancement to the system. The agency did get some additional resources during this interim. The forensic ward is one. They got some additional capacity to handle clients of the Psychiatric Security Review Board who are coming out of the state hospital. And so the recommendation here is not to fund this because of the overall budget limits and the fact that it is an enhancement. Package 218 adds staff to handle the initial licensing and certification of the mental health facilities in the communities. This isn't abuse investigation per se, but this is the upfront and the continuing certification work that's needed. As the agency has expressed, there's a growing number of community facilities. They haven't added staff for a long time in the face of continuous growth here, and this would allow them to add that. I'm recommending a small reduction based on the fact that if you're recruiting for a position and your budget's not done until the middle of June or early July, you're not going to be able to have somebody on board July 1. And so I've just delayed the position by 3 months. Package 233 in the governor's budget reflects the transfer of expenditures related to Oregon Health Plan mental health back into this division's budget. They were in the budget for the 95-97 biennium. For 97-99, they were transferred to OMAP. And at this point, the department believes that it is more appropriate to keep it in the mental health division so that the whole mental health budget and system can tie together more closely. So what we're recommending there is that you approve this package as adjusted in the reshoot, and the numbers are shown on that. Packages 269 and 369 deal with Senate Bill 288. This in fact, just passed the House floor today. These numbers reflect the limitation based on an earlier version of the bill, and we may need to adjust that limitation based on the final version that comes through. But we do recommend approval of the package. It allows the continuation of some rehabilitation facilities under this transitional plan vis-a-vis the workers' benefit funds and coming to them. So those are the recommendations on the packages. Now, if you go back to the cover memo, and we've covered items 1 and 2 on the package discussion. If you go back to the cover memo, it says item number 3, approve the agency's other reshoot adjustments. So we would recommend approval of those with one exception, and this is $70,000 that the division has put into their reshoot plan that would continue the mental health technician pilot program that was established in the 1997 legislative session. This is a joint program with mental health and the community colleges. The pilot program has basically just started. It's in the middle of its first class of mental health technician training, and the problem is that the community colleges did not identify funding to continue this pilot in their budget. Their budget is basically through the Ways and Means process.
They have not been able to identify either how much they need, exactly what they need it for, or where that funding would come from at this point in the process. And so our recommendation is that we not fund the $70,000 in the mental health division budget at this time, understanding that that then means that the division will have to wrap up the pilot program at the end of this biennium and would not continue it or would not be expected to continue their participation into the next biennium.
Okay.
So, as I've noted on the bottom of the first page of the memo there, the reductions that we've taken in the packages and the reshoot adjustment free up, if you will, about $1 million of general fund that has not yet been spoken for, if you will, in the co-chair's plan. On page 2 of the memo,
Madam Chair, does this $1 million general fund meet the 4% reduction in the supplies and services?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, the total reductions that I'm recommending in the agency budget is about 2%, a little over 2% of the personal services and supplies and capital outlay that was in the governor's budget. That includes those package reductions. I'll get to the other administrative reductions I'm recommending here next. But if you look at just the administrative reductions and not include the packages, it's a little less than 1% of their budget.
Mm-hmm.
So if you turn to page 2 of the memo, item number 4 shows the other reductions that have been identified for the co-chair's plan. One of those reflects the fact that in the rebalance plan we just approved, there was $200,000 general fund that was fast-forwarded, if you will, into 97-99. For housing development related to the Fairview downsizing. My recommendation is that because that money was fast-forwarded into 97-99, you take it out of the 99-01 budget. So that, in all, is a zero-sum gain for that line item.
Fast-forward into 97-99?
The discussion during the rebalance was that because the division needed to be able to take advantage of property that became available as it became available, they expected to spend more in 97-99 for property purchases and development than they had originally anticipated. But if you have a limited number of people coming out of Fairview, then your cost for housing development would need to cover those number of persons, but it's not that if you spend the $200,000 early that you're also going to have to spend it again for the same client group. So my theory is here that you have a certain pot of money for housing development. You're spending $200,000 of it in 97-99 that you expected to spend in 99-01. Therefore, you can reduce the 99-01 budget by the $200,000.
Oh, you mean we are spending ahead of time?
Yes. Okay, the next bullet just is...
I'm sorry, Senator Schill.
Question, I guess, and I realize that I may be blowing things out of proportion, but here on page 2, your very first line there, under 4, makes reference to the co-chair's budget plan. And I have to say, we still haven't seen that plan. You know, I just want to keep reminding us that, you know, some people might say that this is the first written proof we have that there is one. I just keep saying we're talking about all these budgets and all these reductions, and I would like to see the whole thing in context of that plan that you're making reference to. I mean, I was just reading ahead here and saw that and thought we ought to raise that issue.
Madam Chair, Senator Shields, perhaps I should clarify that I'm referring to the part of the co-chair's budget plan that I've seen relative to the mental health division's budget reductions. These are ones that we have identified for the co-chairs to plug into their plan. Okay. The second bullet reflects just the Attorney General rate reductions that were taken in the Department of Justice budget. In fact, there will be a little bit of a fund shift in this division to free up that general fund.
because they had identified only other funds for their Attorney General's expenditures, but they will be able to free up that general fund. And then there are administrative reductions that I'm recommending, one administrative position being eliminated and then some hiring delays in administration, not the direct program services areas of the budget. Reductions in in-state travel and training, again, on the administrative side, the central offices. Eliminating one conference out of two that they put on a statewide conference, and then a small reduction in their capital improvement expenditures. It leaves them a little over $1 million for capital improvement expenditures, which is nowhere near the need that they have identified, but it is only a small reduction from the governor's budget level. And then item number five references general fund to other fund shifts. This agency will be giving up general fund and will be getting other funds as a result of the department-wide Medicaid upper limit plan. The details of that the department's still working on, so we'll make that adjustment when we get to the final wrap-up on the department-wide budget. And then there are four posts.
Madam Chair, so does this budget show the additional Medicaid upper limit plan we're going to get?
Madam Chair, Senator, do you know, in this particular budget, there's only a fund shift to accommodate the changes that are made elsewhere. I mean, they will get other funds instead of general fund. Their budget overall will not increase or decrease as a result of that.
Because, Madam Chair, follow-up question.
Senator Yee.
So they're getting $29 million more because of that request, the upper Medicaid upper limit request. They're getting $29 million more for coming biennium.
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, there is a plan overall that provides additional resources to the state. None of those additional resources are targeted for the mental health division's budget. There's a plan that affects other expenditures in other areas, but not the mental health division budget per se. It's just that to implement the plan to make it work, there's going to have to be some fund shifts similar to what we did in services to children and families budget with the temporary assistance for needy family funds, the TANF funds coming in, and the general fund being freed up and going elsewhere. That similar thing will happen here. They'll get other funds, and the general fund will go elsewhere.
Okay. I have another question before we come to the end. I want to know, is the provider wages going to get any increase in the next biennium because of the 90% turnover rate? We have to provide some increase. So I thought that was in the plan to have the providers increase something like 50 cents per hour. Is this being allowed here? People chuckling. Why are they chuckling?
Madam Chair, or Senator Yee, I think we're chuckling because we anticipated this question. We've had several conversations with you, so Barry has the answer for you, we hope.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Senator, I admire your steadfast support for the workers in our system. I appreciate that very much. The long-range plan for developmental disabilities with the fund changes resulting from the changes at Fairview was made available $1 by July of 2002. In addition, the November Emergency Board added 50 cents, which was from a reserve that was created by the 1997 session, and in January 98, another 30 cents was authorized for January 99. So what we have to date is $1.30, which has been added to direct care staff wages, with another 50 cents scheduled in two increments of 25 cents each, July 2000 and July of 2002. For a total increase in wages of $1.80 per hour on the average. And this table, which I've asked to be distributed, and I assume you're looking at now, sort of puts that in perspective. The legislature went beyond the long-range plan and added an additional 80 cents over the life of this initiative.
Yes,
Chair.
I have
a
I thought there's going to be 25 cents in July 2000 and another 25 cents in 2001. I thought I saw that in package 4.
That's James here, and I think James can probably address the changes that have occurred that have not.
For the record, James Pace from the Mental Health Developmental Disability Services Division. Madam Chair, Senator Yee, for this coming biennium, it will be cost of living adjustments, which is the usual part of the budget, that will also add to the direct care wage. And then there is one 25-cent increase across the board for direct care wages, which will occur in July of the year 2000. Then we anticipate another 25 cents will be added in the biennial budget following
2001-2003.
But 2001 is not here. Madam Chair, Senator Yee, I think we have a discussion during Ways and Means. Originally, in our budget submission, we had proposed two 25-cent increases for a total of 50 cents. That was not ultimately included in the governor's budget. It was the one 25-cent increase was included, the second one was not.
There was a promise to give them by the legislature that there was going to be a 50-cent increase in providing wages. Not talking about minimum wage. And this is only a 25-cent increase.
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, The promise will still be made, but the problem is when. When we put the original budget together for the long-range plan in the base budget, we laid out the first 50-cent increase in the first biennium, and Barry already described the legislature and the E-Board then approved an amount above that. And then in the second biennium of the plan, we added 25 cents, and then in the third biennium of the plan, as the full savings of the Fairview closure accrued, we added the last 25-cent bump. In our budget submission, originally, before it even went to the department or the governor, because of the turnover rates that we were experiencing, we proposed to include both 25-cent increases in this biennium rather than letting the last one occur in the 2001-2003 biennium. That second 25-cent increase was not included in this biennial budget. We will still, it's still projected in the base from the eventual savings from Fairview for the 2001-2003 biennium.
So we, Madam Chair.
Yes.
So there's only a 25 cents increase.
Correct.
On top of the biennium. So what do you predict the turnover rate will be? It will remain at 90%, which is really something that is not acceptable. I mean, all the services that we need to provide to the clients will not be there. We keep changing the providers.
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, we agree 90% is not anywhere near acceptable. Right now, the last major bump of the wage increase, which I think was 80 cents as of January 1st, that was allocated. We are now taking data again on every single program out there in terms of their turnover rates. We believe the turnover is stabilizing to some degree, not anywhere to the degree that we would like it to, but we believe that for now it's stabilizing somewhat. What that's going to do in terms of the long run, given the rest of the economy and the competition, we simply don't know at this point.
Yes, because I understand we're below market rates. And because of the competition you're facing with the demand on the market for jobs, I mean for employment, your employment rate is not going to get any better. Your turnover rate.
No.
I would like to put all this in context a little bit. I mean, you've got a great chart here that describes what will ultimately be $1.80. Would you put that in context of your averages, average wages here, there, and so on, please?
Madam Chair, Senator Shields, we started out with an average of about six-something an hour. And again, we don't actually set the wages for community providers. We
let's know the average.
The average started at a little over $6 an hour. When we're done with the full $1.80 increase for this biennium, it takes us, I believe, to $8.35 an hour, give and take. It's very close as an average at the end of the current biennium. And then you add to that the cost of living adjustments and the second 25-cent increase for next biennium. So we should end up somewhere close to $8.75, $8.80 an hour.
I think we had a pretty in-depth discussion about this when we had public hearings on this budget, and I really would like to move on because we need, the Senate is going to go back into session pretty soon, and so I'd like to get through the explanation of this and move on the budget.
Could we, Madam Chair, have an impact of if we give them 50 cents provided wages increase for the coming biennium rather than the 25 cents per hour? What is the fiscal impact? Maybe that can possibly be an add back list.
We can produce that number. I'll have legislative fiscal produce some kind of a number for you, and then that could, if the committee so desired, put that on the add back list. It would be one that we could address if we see what's available. Thank you. Okay.
Then if you turn to the third page in your packet, these are the proposed budget notes. The first relates to children's intensive treatment services and how those get tied in with the Oregon Health Plan. There was a pilot project process started this biennium. The pilots actually won't be up and or are just now getting up and running, and so there's not a recommendation or an ability to say how this is all going to work at this point. So what this budget note covers is basically to continue the pilot project. The language is very similar to what was in the last budget report, and it defines how the pilots and the evaluations should be carried out.
Any questions on this?
The second budget note is some direction to the agency to work with Department of Corrections, who has a newly created storage warehouse with some improved distribution for their facilities and some dispensation, if you will, from the food purchasing agreements that the state is otherwise required to do. And the idea is that there may be some savings for the mental health facilities, which are in large part in the same areas as some of the correctional facilities, and there may be some way to piggyback mental health food purchases and storage and distribution with what Department of Corrections is doing. So this basically directs the agency to work with Department of Corrections on that issue and then to report back on what they've been able to do. The third budget note asks the agency to come back to the emergency board every 6 months to keep legislative members updated on how the DD long-range plan is progressing. It does add a reporting element. The last phrase there, activities related to the Fairview property maintenance and disposition, with the plan closure in July of 2000. It's important for some information to be available on what's happening with that property as it goes through the planning process.
Madam Chair, during public hearings, I think a concern was expressed about programs the department has for people on the waiting list. You give them the so-called self-directed services. Now, I hear that administrative rules are not written for this program, and there's lack of accountability, and it really does not help people on the waiting list because the money is used for capital investment. An example was given that if a family can use a fence around the house to provide better protection, and the next day if they sell the house has increased in value because of the fences. And really, the person gets a higher price for the house,
and the client doesn't get that much benefit from it after they move. So our rules being written for the self-directed program so we can see more accountability.
I'm going to allow you to answer that question, but Senator Yee, we had a hearing on this, and if you have a budget amount to offer, that would be one thing, and you should do that for the legislative fiscal officer, but this is not a public hearing. This is a work session, and if it is about a budget note, I would be interested in having this discussion, but this is a work session on this budget.
Yes. Madam Chair, I appreciate your indulgence, but can we hear a yes or no answer?
We can hear a yes or no answer.
Are there rules written program?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, I'll take 30 seconds or less. No, there are not current rules because the emergency board, based on a pickup from Medicaid, gave us an anticipated amount that was not in our original plan. We allocated that very quickly to the counties with interim guidelines in the contract on how expenditures could and could not be made. The full rule is we're forming the rule advisory committee of all of the interested parties now. The rules will be written by the end of summer, but in the meantime, we have interim contract guidelines on that. I think the example you gave was not something that happened. It was concern about what might happen if there weren't proper guidelines in place.
Well, Madam Chair, I work with fiscal analysts in providing a budget note for your review and approval.
Okay, well,
because we need accountability for our program.
I agree that we do need accountability. And I guess the budget note might be something that we could add after we've moved the budget. So I'd be glad to entertain it.
Okay, the final budget note in here on this page addresses some concerns about the role of the Capital Planning Commission. It's not particular to Mental Health Division, but it applies to the extent that the Fairview property would be disposed of during this interim. It just clarifies that the Capital Planning Commission needs to be involved in any plans to dispose or transfer that surplus property.
Madam Chair.
Representative Brown.
Jerry, would this in any way make it difficult to get the appropriate price for the property of Fairview if you had to wait and consider input from the capital, get approval of the Capital Planning Commission?
Madam Chair, Representative Ross, I don't see how it would. I mean, we get approval from the Capital Planning Commission on just about everything that...
Thank you.
And in fact, I think the bill that we just passed has, it alludes to the Capital Planning budget as well. So that's something that we need to do. I hope everybody does and fails. Are there any further questions?
I'm sure Mr. Berkman might should come in here today.
Well,
but the $7 million that you received from the Oregon Health Sciences University, where are we seeing that? Is in the reimbursement or it was a hole in your budget till we received the $7 million from the Oregon Health Sciences University. Thank you. $7.5 million, Senator Yee.
Madam Chair, Senator Kim, the governor's budget, the other funds limitation in the governor's budget assumed both that there was backfill of half of that disproportionate share hospital reduction and that there would be some funding in the emergency fund that would be available to this division. And so the other fund limitation, my understanding is the other fund limitation is already in this budget. And so the agreement from Oregon Health Science University to basically cover that, although that particular agreement was assumed, the other fund limitation that's needed is already in this budget.
Okay, so it did have an effect on what we have here, the LFO recommendation?
The recommendation is not adjusted one way or the other for that. If that would not have happened and if there would have been an expectation that there would have been a resulting hole in the division's budget, then we would have had to do something about that. But because the governor's budget assumes that money even from a different source, there's not an adjustment needed here.
Okay. Well, I just want to give credit for it, too. They did have an effect.
Are there any further questions about the LFO recommendation of the of this budget, the mental health and developmental disability services edition?
Madam Chair.
Representative Strobeck.
I just had a brief question on package 203. Sheila, is that certain position added, pretty new positions for the state hospital? And
yes, it is. And it's adding new positions because one of the findings when the hospital was reviewed was that they did not have sufficient positions to cover when they needed to.
And when do those begin?
Those are assumed to be 24-month positions, in large part because in some cases they got temporary staff that they could move into those, or other people, the full group people, if no one else, that they could move into those as permanent positions very quickly.
Mm-hmm. So essentially they're fully funded from the beginning of the biennium to the end.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Oh, I had one other question.
Okay.
The package 233. This Oregon Health Plan transfer, will that show up then as a total in the Oregon Health Plan budget as well?
What this does is reduces OMAP's budget by this amount and puts the money into the mental health division budget.
But it's still delivered through Oregon Health Plan?
It is still tied in with the Oregon Health Plan when you look at a statewide number of what the Oregon Health Plan is.
So when we're considering Oregon Health Plan budget, this will be part of that.
Yes.
It will be, but actually I think often people see the figure for the Oregon Health Plan right now without this.
That's a
good point, and I was going to bring it up. This does not appear as Oregon Health Plan in the Oregon Health Plan.
It doesn't.
The total of the Oregon Health Plan right now shows a figure different than, or with this eliminated or subtracted. You have to actually add the two together to see what the actual amount is, because it has been transferred out into this division. So that total does not show, and we should be aware that I think it's 600 and some million. And in reality, should be 800 and around 800. Okay. Further questions? Okay. There's your motion. So the chair would move LFO's recommendation for the mental health and developmental disability services division. Is there discussion?
Madam Chair, does the department have a general idea what does it cost if we put 0.25 cents per hour back in the coming biennium?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, we have figured that several different ways, and we can give you that number. In fact, I think your staff may already have some of those numbers. If she doesn't,
I do somewhere. So what is it?
Well, we don't want to have money to spend a tunnel over this.
Do you think 25 cents is going to change the 90% turnover?
Well, it'll be a little better.
I don't know that it will.
Besides, I think that's what we promised them.
While I'm looking for the number, if I could just... the bottom line in the way that I've analyzed the increases is that the promises that were made in terms of overall pay increases for those providers have been met and exceeded. The timing is different. We've put it in earlier, the legislature has and the emergency board has approved putting it in earlier, but in terms of bottom line, they are ahead of where they would have been if we had stuck with the original plan.
And Senator Yee, because that is not in this recommendation, it really doesn't have very much relevance to the discussion of the motion right now.
Well,
it may be something that you want to add to the add back list, which we're going to have to do at another time. But we can't add it back then.
Well, I think it is the committee's consensus.
It is. Mm-hmm.
Can we add it back? I have a feeling.
Right now, no.
We probably won't. In the year 2001, mm-hmm. we're supposed to have 25 cents increase.
And Chair, let me just take 1 second
okay.
here. I think the point where we're not doing very well communicating probably is that the 25 cents that you're talking about was given to them
earlier
than they were originally scheduled to get it. So they, in fact, have the 25 cents earlier than they were expected to get it. That's why you don't see it in the next budget.
Okay. When was the time you gave it to them earlier? It was in the November 97 emergency board, they got an additional 50 cents an hour, and then in January in 98, they got an additional 30 cents an hour.
Isn't that true?
Mm-hmm. Was given earlier?
Yeah.
In November of 97.
The emergency board.
Right.
So it was given in November and December 98. But I think the department proposed to give them 50 cents increase in July 2000 and July 2001. It's in one of your packages here.
Senator Yeen, Madam Chair, we'd be glad to sit down and go through those exactly so we can show you how they are actually. Their wages are above what we originally forecast them to be, and we can walk you through all that and show you the impact on employees.
Okay. Senator Shields?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You pointed out earlier that out of a $600 million general fund budget, $203,000 mm-hmm. isn't that big of a deal, and I guess I'd like to look at it from the other end. I really don't want to make a big deal out of this item, but package 101, I think, could cost $1 million or more if there's some major investigations that blow up and end up in a newspaper and so on. I'd never suggest my vote's for sale, but if we could somehow get package 101 out of this list, I'm willing to sign off on the rest of them. I would like us to think about that for a minute. And it's only $201,000 to do the investigation, the enhancement that's needed as we move from Fairview to a totally community-based system. And we want to make sure that there aren't any abuses that are taken care of, that are occurring, that we might be able to catch with a few more people on this zone. I'm sorry to bring that up again, but I just feel strongly about it, and I hope you'll all think about it. That's just a risk that I'm not willing to take.
Representative Loken? Madam Chair, but I thought that we heard that the department is going to look at what is possible and how they can
mm-hmm. I think we did hear that, and the other thing we heard is that there is an office that already does this, and if it were dismantling an office that investigated abuse, I could understand the tremendous concern. But I understand, Senator Shields, what you're offering, and maybe what you're saying is this needs to be on the ad-back list, and if the committee feels strongly about adding this particular item on that ad back list because we've created some flexibility here. The committee, I'm sure, would be happy to entertain that.
Sure, and it's at least considered on the ad back
list. Okay.
Representative Strobeck.
I'll be supporting your motion, but I would just encourage 101 to be on the ad back list. I'll just make that a request.
Okay. Right.
I concur, and I think you're right that this is a big department. There are a lot of positions, but they do try to do what the legislature said in terms of their budget.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we want them to do this, then we need to be clear. And you know, if there's something else we don't want them to do, then that's great too. But I see this training as being very important, and in the long run, I would like to see qualified trained people doing this investigation. So I would hope that we could consider today that.
Okay. I think we're pretty clear then that this will go on the ad back list and be a consideration.
Well, Madam Chair, I also like to see the 25-day increase on the ad back list.
Okay. What I would like for that particular request, Senator Yee, is for you to sit down with Gary Weeks and Barry Cast and have them walk through what was promised, what has been given, and then if you come back seeing that it hasn't been given, then we'll put it on the ad back list. But if you are convinced that what has been promised has in a timely manner, in fact, ahead of time, been given, then we've taken care of your concerns.
Right. But this was recommended by the department in the package 201, but was not included in the governor's budget. So if you recommended that and not recommended by the governor, that means it was recommended after all those increases you talk about in November 97 and January 98. Because the department must have made your recommendation in the fall of 98 after all those increases. So you still recommended to increase 50 cents an hour for the coming biennium. The government did not affect it. So
And that's why they can't.
And they still have the 90% turnover.
And that's why I would say that the agency is not here advocating for that particular package, since it is not in the governor's budget. They aren't authorized to come up here and tell us that they want it or need it.
Yeah, but they still have the 90% turnover rate that we are all
concerned
with. So. How is it time for me to come back and recommend to the committee?
Well, we're going to be, until we finish the complete Department of Human Resources budget, we can have an add-back list. So there still is time, Senator.
Okay.
This is a division, but you can add that to the add-back list. It doesn't have to be within this. I mean, we don't have to say it today. We don't have to know the figure today. But if you come back with a figure to the committee and say that you would like X dollars set aside in that ad back list and what the value of that is, we'll be happy to entertain that as a part of the ad back list, because we're going to put all the money that we have been able to gather up and then look at our priority of where we want to add that.
But I just feel there's compelling enough reason.
Right,
and include that today. But if
we don't have a figure, a dollar figure.
$7.2 million.
$7.2 million.
Yeah, but
yeah,
that would be $3.5 million probably.
That's true. I think everybody's confused. Sheila's looking. They're looking. You know, there's only one way to solve this, and it's you to get together, Senator Yee, with.
Right.
And with Sheila and go through this, because supposedly what I heard Sheila say that was already taken care of was not considered in this budget.
Yes, according to the providers, it's not taken care of.
Okay, well.
I will do some research.
All right, thank you, Senator. Any further discussion?
And then I'll do research also on the rules that need to be implemented.
For a budget note.
Yeah,
all right.
Self-directed program.
All right. Is there any objection? The record will note Representative Roth, Senator Yee, and Senator Shields. Having the we passed. And we will adjourn and return tomorrow at 1:00. Thank you, Rick.